So welcome to this meeting, which is looking at making use of empty buildings for various purposes. And there's people who hopefully are in the room going to be able to talk about various projects that they're involved with. At least two people here. Do you care who starts?
No,
I'm not.
So I'll start. I'm part of the artist practice called Studio Polpo, and we're interested in a shared ways of living. And we've run a number of projects looking at introducing kind of shared housing as kind of opposite to more private, more gated, and smaller ways of living, which is often a kind of an emerging trend in the way that housing has developed. And we do a number of different ways. So some of the projects are more traditional artist projects, so we're working with co-housing groups, so that's a group that decide they want to live together with an emphasis on shared activities, and we're kind of designing five sort of new houses for them. But the project I sort of thought would be most interesting or kind of relevant for this meeting is a series of like events and performances that we've sort of been developing, which introduce sort of temporary and shared living, sleeping, and domestic activities into unused buildings or underused buildings. We use the kind of framework of kind of performance or kind of art, kind of sort of stealthily call ourselves artists, and we can kind of do more than we could if we were architects or seem to be within the kind of structure of an art, sort of an artist project. And we've managed to install sleeping facilities, cooking, things like that, and we host, we invite people, some people we know, sometimes it's sometimes public, and we invite people to sort of share a night in this kind of temporary living space, sleeping space. We did it first for the Festival of Mind, it's called Opera, so it's an open public experimental residential activity, and we did it first for the Festival of Mind when we kind of did it 10 days in a row. Each day, kind of different members of the studio, different friends, and also different members of the public who kind of turned up because it was part of a bigger exhibition, kind of stepped over for those kind of 10 days. And we've now just reinstalled some of the opera space and the shared living space into Theatre Delhi, which is a theatre group that's taken over the building. And we've decided rather than doing kind of 10 days or lots of days in a row, actually to fit in around our other kind of domestic and work social lives, we're kind of going to do it once a month. We started it, and so each on the first Sunday of the month we host these one-off events that just demonstrate some of the benefits and the enjoyment that come from shared living. And alongside that, we're also interested in because this works within kind of the existing structures and existing kind of empty buildings and developers, so work with developers. We're also interested in how this kind of shared way of living and sociable house might translate if within the context of kind of cooperatives and community land trusts and structures which take land and buildings out of private ownership and out of speculation. So that's kind of where I'm at, where I'm coming from.
Great, thanks. Maybe
you can say something about your project and then any questions before we
walk in. Should I just
like a full overview
or just like a
little
bit? Sorry,
yeah. A lot.
Ask them back.
Just give like a...
Oh, sorry.
Overview,
yeah.
Okay, all right. So I guess as people that are coming to an anarchist event, we're all kind of aware of issues of land ownership and how most space that we're in is generally commercial, state, private, and we're all kind of conscious of how if you want to get together with people, you've generally got to pay for a coffee or a beer or a room high or whatever. And I was being quite conscious of that as well in doing kind of organising, activist campaign sessions. Always been quite conscious of the success that we could have, that ultimately they seem to kind of, the thing we organise finishes and everyone goes home, and ultimately if we're going to make any transitional progression, we're going to, the space homes that we all come back to that is able to build on that is obviously fundamental to that progression in the future, and obviously why you're making through the desire to create a social space, an anarchist social space. A few years ago, I discovered a few things which for me made me get that I thought this would be the kind of tools in the toolbox to make it happen. So I thought I'd just run through what I thought were the kind of tools in the toolbox that I think are quite transformational that I've been working on a bit, and I'd kind of like to recommend and help other people do them if that's useful as well. And the first thing that I discovered was something called meanwhile use. I thought I'd explain a bit about that first of all. Apart from John, has anyone else heard of what meanwhile use is before? You've heard of that? Anyone else heard of meanwhile use? What it is? Okay, so during the Labour government, they realised that the number of empty properties was rising year on year. Each year was a record year for empty properties. And they created a template lease which you could take to a landlord and say to a landlord, we don't want to pay rent for your place, but we would like to access it and occupy it and maintain it and use it and bring it back into life. So we're going to offer you like a win-win relationship. We'll bring you this service, and we won't charge you for this service, but as a result, you won't charge us any rent. We'd like to come into your building and do that. And I kind of thought that you know, it was the first kind of gap in the armour of the capitalist system in a way. You know, in the past, a non-commercial, non-competitive concept would never be on the high street. You know, you'd find Starbucks and Costa and HMV and Boots. You wouldn't find one of our ideas on the high street. That'd be stupid. We can't compete with the shareholders in London. But now with the empty properties on the high street and using the meanwhile use, we can do those things. And because we can, you know, the kind of opportunities that we can imagine are now possible. The second thing I was quite conscious of was the kind of change from employment to self-employment. How, according to the Office for National Statistics, 2/3 of new employment now comes from self-employment. I think it's an incredible statistic. 2/3 of new jobs are now self-employed jobs. And discovered something called co-working spaces, which I was quite inspired by, really, because I thought co-working turns on its head the dynamic of the traditional workplace. Traditional workplace where you get one owner and everyone else who has no control, and the workplace is an evil place where you have to do nothing of which you have any agency over. The self-employed co-working space turns that completely on its head, where actually every participant has the agency, makes the decisions, they are in control, and the space facilitates that. And the best co-working spaces I've been to are really inspiring places where activism and art and creativity and enterprise all come together in one really inspiring space, which is amazing. So I suppose ultimately I wanted to create a space which was that, but also which was a cooperative, so you could actually live in the environment, a working environment, which we're told we do, where we work in a democratic environment, where people democratically choose the way they work, wanted to do that. And then I discovered social enterprise and how the government, through people like the Big Lottery, are looking to give grants, as in give cash that you don't pay back, to ideas which create opportunities to solve social problems. Again, I think really relevant to this idea of creating space for meeting and making things happen. And finally discovered something called, the charitable object called recreational purpose. So it's charitable to create a space for the purpose of recreation, which actually means that you can take a space which had big business rate liability, put it for the purpose of a recreational purpose, and avoid the rate liability, which means you can offer a landlord who has a large amount of space significant savings if they allow you to come in and put it into the purpose of benefiting the community and addressing social issues. So all those things combined, I think, create a really interesting toolkit. We started this on Division Street with an empty shop. We then took it to some more empty shops. We then saw a big empty building just near to the Peace Garden, as you might have heard of it. It's called Union Street. It's quite big initially. Before, there's no way we can do that. It's 4 stories high. It's massive. But we kind of collaborated with a number of organisations, John and the Studio Bob, which took the top floor. And so the 4 stories creates a really interesting opportunity. So I'll just quickly tell you what we've done over those 4 stories to try and create an ecosystem. I suppose the kind of income-generating floor initially is the co-working floor. We've got over 50 people now who are paying monthly standing orders. It's really cheap. We've tried to keep it as cheap as we can just to cover costs. Nobody's taken a wage yet. It's been going a year. Everything's gone back into to pay what largely has been heating bills over the winter, which has been frustrating. The ground floor has got a lot of footfall, and it's got, 2 weeks ago we started serving coffee. Who hasn't been into Starbucks and Costa and thought, we deserve a better place to have our conversations as a society than Costa and Starbucks. Let's do something about that. But I'm also conscious that it's not as easy as that. You've got to start somewhere, and you've got to start learning your lessons and making your mistakes and getting better at it. So we're hoping the ground floor of Union Street is that launch pad, that testing ground for people who want to do something about that, for startup coffee, pastry, sandwich, cake people. And we just hosted a social enterprise called Twin Cafe that came from the University of Sheffield. They purchased their coffee from a small farmers co-op in Nicaragua, and they invest their profits into social projects in Nicaragua and in Sheffield, which hopefully more of that happening. And the next floor we're about to invest in is the first floor, which is a big space for ideas and opening our minds up to new ways of thinking. We've got Sheffield Buddhist Centre committed to doing two sessions a day to help people come in early and get focused, potentially then go to the ground floor and have conversations with your organic fair trades, then come up onto the second floor and create some enterprise and some creativity potentially before going back. So this, with this space, which is a large workshop space, we kind of want to create an alternative to the way that the workstation or voluntary action Sheffield might go. You know, if I want to hire some space in Sheffield, because I might have an idea or a session to benefit the community, I would generally be asked for a lot of money to hire that space out, and as a result, I generally won't do it. We've been saying we're not going to ask for a penny until you make some cash, and then when you do, give us a fair cut. And I'd love to see a space where, in Sheffield, you can access new ideas, new ways of thinking, grassroots, bite-sized, quality education through that type of resource. We've also been kind of creating that call out for people to do events and workshops. So we hosted the Festival of Debate. I don't know if you came across the Festival of Debate. It was 44 events leading up to the election. The Social Enterprise Social, which brings together Sheffield Hallam University, the University of Sheffield, and leading funders from across Yorkshire and the UK, so that if you've got an idea and you want to do something that makes a social impact in Sheffield, ideally you can meet the funders, meet collaborators, see other people that are doing it, hear about people that want to help you to do it, and start, you know, helping that change have momentum as well. 2 days ago we did a Skillshare for women that want to have ideas, are doing ideas, want to network, and that was a sellout event. That was amazing. So hopefully more of that. So my kind of message would be kind of threefold really on this one. At Union Street, I would there's loads of opportunity, loads of space, loads of potential to make a living and also make a cooperative, anarchist, self-sustaining community that grows and builds momentum in Sheffield, and I really am keen for more people to get involved with that. We've just started looking at two more buildings, big buildings, one on the Mall and one on West Street, and really excited about those. But the other side of it is that also really keen to help other people that might have an idea for an organisation or a way of doing things that we could maybe support with some of these ideas to help other things with other groups happen as well. Yes, that's maybe what we're making.
Ooh,
that's
interesting. Okay, so is anyone else in the room involved in any other kind of projects where you're using empty buildings for anything, or you have been in the past, or you're aware of anything interesting that's going on, or you've got some ideas for the future?
I've helped John with the recent op project.
With what, sorry?
The op project.
Uh-huh,
so
yeah.
Yeah,
it's kind of helping out that. Anything you want to supplement what he said? In terms of your experience?
I think you kind of covered my, it's an interesting, it's an interesting intersection kind of between a lot of different things, and it seems to resonate with quite a lot of people. The idea of actually coming and staying within a piece of art that's actually not really a piece of art, like, it's kind of quite an interesting kind of thought-provoking process that maybe creates, just by the act of sleeping, it's an action in itself, which is quite fascinating. So, yeah.
I'm kind of aware of creating a midway ground when it comes to, like, squatting's kind of
exactly
pitched in a kind of oh, that's quite illegal and whatever, and then you've got like legal, but what you're doing is kind of in the middle, which makes it more accessible and attract different types of people and create new types of conversations, which seems
that's a big problem. It's like the brand of squatting is kind of like such an inhibitor. Like, every, you know, there needs to be something really actively challenging this brand, not from like any kind of top down way, but like in a kind of well, let's actually make something work in these buildings. Like, I don't know, it's kind of gone on for far too long that there's so many buildings, so many people, and the, you know, media is still branding anything that's a bit proactive in any of these buildings as squatting. It's a potential thing that could, like, you know, change something. It's quite necessary, I think. It's very much like what Trump and
I'm actually interested in doing some squatting in the medium term. Presumably it'd have to be a non-residential building these days. But the thing is, I recently got myself back on, well, I'm back in an accommodation, an empty accommodation, but it made me realise it's like the bar is so high these days, you know, you have to have the money, the deposit, the legal fees, you have to have a reference from all employers. Yeah. Unfortunately, I found a very eccentric landlord and just let me move in for a month's rent, no budget. If he hadn't, I would be on the streets now. And I'm fine there, but at some point in the future, he might move to Spain or something. So I need like a plan B, you know, how to find myself accommodation semi-permanent. Without, you know, I just don't think I can, you know, renting somewhere has become like a massive achievement, you know, credibility, you know. So, you know, I'm interested in the medium term of getting together with people and finding out what's possible. So, and the other thing is, I'm directing a play at the moment, and where I wrote it as well, and I designed it so you could just go on a flat piece of space, you know. So I'm looking to do a 50-50 door split with any spaces that want to put that on in July.
What's the play about?
It's a bit like Accidental Death and Anarchist, you know. And it's about this woman who gets sacked, and she says, if you sack me, I will kill you. And he said, well, you can't kill me because the mafia couldn't have to kill me because the bank wouldn't have any money.
Oh, you can't kill me because someone
else is going to
kill me first?
Yes. So she said, well, I could cooperate to kill him, and then he waits and starts sliding off the script, and, you know, he's kind of mad, you know. Well, a bit in a controlled bit. But I've got some actors to do it, so it must be a decent script, you know. I've got some flyers anyway.
Does anyone have any direct questions for either of the projects that have been discussed?
I don't live in Sheffield, but I'm just interested. Are there any meanwhile projects in Sheffield doing at the moment? Sheffield Council.
I think that the theatre study is a meanwhile use project. Do you know that one? So there's the old Woolworths on My Street. So the councillor pushing it, is it Renew Sheffield or something like that? They're trying to replicate the project from Renew Newcastle, which is in Australia, I think it's New Zealand, Australia. And they're trying to use that model to renew energy spaces. So there is an awareness that we might use.
The dedicated beacon of helping people access these spaces. Like, so you go to this and she tells you where they are.
I think this is an important kind of question. Who benefits from this community on use? I think that let's maybe that.
No, I mean, it's fine time to question it now.
Come about later. I think with a lot of these projects, there's a huge amount of time and energy that's invested in empty buildings. Buildings have quite uncertain futures. I mean, there's often a question about, given all that energy and investment, and often done voluntarily, who benefits from that? I think a lot of the successful, the more successful meanwhile projects are the ones that have a very public profile with the backing of a lot of these groups and community. And I think when you talk about the kind of the brand of squatting, or one of the the issues or the sort of dilemmas of how you do these types of kind of taking over building activity and do it with a high kind of profile so that you end up being given or making claims for a longer term presence, or so you're using kind of temporary use to make longer term claims. I think that's true. Especially when the council starts to get behind these kind of meanwhile uses.
So when you're saying you should question who benefits, then you're saying that's something that can be developed, and you know, so like the property owner develops if the building is maintained, but the tables can be turned so that the group using it can benefit more than they currently do if it's a short-term thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
But it could be a carrot and stick thing as well, couldn't it? Like a carrot could be, you know, we can do all sorts of wonderful things. And the stick could be, you'd be trying to throw us out of the lot of time building.
Yeah.
Somewhere along those lines. There's some play between those two features.
You know? Yeah, how you work with bigger, more commercial forces. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting. It's something worth talking about. Because working alongside more profitable ventures. Because developers are aware of the kind of value that doing these kind of central projects change the kind of perception, public perception of spaces and buildings and sites. So, and that has a huge amount of value to developers. So that's often why they're encouraging these kind of central projects. But I think trying to ensure that there is an exchange there. You come in, you change the perception, but also you get something back.
Well, they've got an agenda, and it's like Hoxton in London, you know, they want to support the green member of the Bohemian, and then you want the young professional community. So, you know, we have to try and resist that agenda to whatever extent we can.
Yes, the gentrifying effect of temporary use is something that's been, if you look at something like Germany, it's just been extensively explored. This
type of
issue. It's
probably
not
there.
And there's lots of
ground
from there as well.
Does anyone else have any other just immediate questions on things
that were
said?
I'm quite interested in how you have found the empty buildings and the owners. And the processes behind those, because as far as I'm aware, there's no kind of what's called a meanwhile like map, anything about where these spaces are, who owns them, how would you contact them, and this is potentially quite difficult for like kind of initial level grassroots organisations to go, oh, actually, here's where they exist. You know, I'm wondering if you've got any research about that.
In practice, the meanwhile map is like forever.com or any other property agent that lists all the empty buildings and visual map of to let.
Yeah.
So, yeah. To create a map, yeah, that would be house to.
Yeah.
You can maybe create a map of venues you were impressed by their potential, or we could create a map of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bring some people's attention.
Yeah. I mean, for me, there's so many of them. I advocate collaboration to create the critical mass and momentum that you wouldn't get by saying to every group of community, take a building each, and more so, let's focus on one or two.
The Tourette signs isn't the only guide, because lots of buildings are just not being used, and the landlord is not actively trying to put them into use either. And there have been freedom of information requests that have gone in to get listings of like empty council-owned property, for example. Those lists have kind of been circulated online to highlight the scandal of resources that are going unused. I'm kind of interested in the extent to which these agreements restrict the uses that can then be made of spaces, and the extent to which you have to kind of fit in with the general capitalist agenda if you want to use space with the permission of capitalists, basically. And I'm sure that you've come up against that in Union Street, and your short-term projects are a little bit different, but I mean, you're trying to do something long-term, and a lot of it is workspaces where self-employed people can, you know, sell their wares on the capitalist market, and, you know, they can self-exploit themselves, and that's not a problem for capitalism. And then, you know, other aspects of the space you're hoping are more kind of like, you know, transformative, at least for the individual, if not the wider society. And then I also wondered about how your cafe downstairs competes with the cafe in Piacentello, whether you cooperate with that other grouping, because they seem quite close to both be selling cheap coffee in a sort of that kind of space.
There's some really interesting debates to be had. I'm not going to go into detail. I have any restrictions on selling alcohol. That's the only restriction. And I don't encourage people to self-exploit themselves. I encourage a space where there is freedom of independent thought and activity, and that could be for any use, as long as it's harm the person next to you, basically. And a debate we've often had about if you fund a space, does that restrict you from having political activity in the space? And the other side to that is always the example of the community centre, where a funder might fund a specific part of it, but they wouldn't fund all the activities within it. So many activities are completely free to be whatever they want, as long as they're not legal, but you'd only approach a funder for a specific activity if it fitted their criteria. I think that what I'd like to do in terms of coffee is I'd like to create a space where it lives up to what human beings living in Sheffield are capable of creating culturally, creatively, and where the finances are put to a socially useful purpose. And if I was near to someone who was doing that, I would not want to take away from them doing that. I probably want to go and help them do it and make it better. I don't know if that's what they're doing on my end. So if I found they were, I wouldn't want to compete with them. But I think that this issue of competition is an interesting one, and one that we've had to look at it a number of times. People come into the space who have similar types of work, and I think that you can collaborate as opposed to compete in most cases. There's generally ways of differentiating, so both benefit. People have come into the space who do a similar job to me, and my first reaction has been, well, you can't come in because I don't want you to be in my space. But I think a better way is come in and let's work together, so if that's possible.
I missed the beginning. If you've already covered this, I'm interested what the law is about these communal spaces, and if they've got retail use, and is there a clash with sleeping there overnight? So, do you come up against problems?
The short answer is there's a massive grey area about what you can and can't do. The one thing is, if you have an agreement with the landlord, it's not illegal to sleep in a building or turn it to residential. The only thing is, it does have open, it opens you up to people complaining. So if neighbours complain about activity, then the council has to kind of respond to that. The council doesn't actively go out and try and see whether people are sleeping in buildings. That's not their remit. They only react against complaints. So,
you get a lot of grief from health and safety, you know, you want to do a cooking. The average cafe has spent like 6 months setting itself up.
And I was just thinking in terms of the sleeping thing. I mean, my understanding is that if you have a workspace, if you commercially rent a studio, which is your creative workspace, that you cannot live there and that you cannot sleep there, and that's around building regs and all sorts of things about, you know, there's basic kind of standards of like how many toilets per head and all that kind of stuff. And so you can't just actually go and live in the workspace.
I thought there was a rule, if you have a workspace, you're allowed to sleep above it. There's some kind of rule there.
But you know the whole thing with your cooking bread. I mean, you know, in a restaurant, their cookers have been double-checked and they've all been boxed. So, you know, if you bring in a cooker, start using it. I would have thought that was a safety.
We avoid almost all of this is just completely an art project. So,
as dangerous as you like.
Which, in a way, is great.
Fair enough, good one.
Which is, a way, is great, but it does.
I mean, where, and so to take that kind of issue of cooking, where there are social centres that are rented or owned, so I'm just thinking in particular of an owned social centre, so they, you know, they haven't got to answer to a landlord, but the council still have rights to come in, food hygiene people come in, and basically, you know, there have been issues where the type of political activity going on in those social spaces has meant they have had a lot of attention in terms of their hygiene and their fire risks and all that kind of stuff. And the, you know, the council has got kind of an oversight of standards which can be applied to make people's lives difficult.
But also it's a good idea.
And I'm not saying it isn't a good idea to stop the building burning down and people dying. Yeah, it's a great idea have that kind of control. But I'm just saying that that's where it's sort of like to the fore in those spaces, that when you have a legitimate space, then the state can and does still have control over it, even if you feel that you are controlling that space, because you know, that's the world we live in. And in as much as, you know, when you have a squatter space and it's you've got control over what you do in it, so long as you keep the state out, and it's like that's part of your like daily duties as maintaining that space, is to make it effective as you keep the state out. Because if you are letting the state in, then you know you have to play by their rules.
Or be an artist.
I mean, we're sort of testing limitations with this. Yeah. In the practical level, we take it upon ourselves to check fire safety, and we have public liability insurance. So, as a practice, we have some security there. But we kind of do like to make it interesting to explore this kind of architecture through other means, through our practice, and also how that might transfer to kind of more conventional architecture. So that we are interested in the link between what we're doing calling a performance and what we're doing actually on a more conventional hassle. So that makes sense. Well, sometimes we do get limitations from the organisers. So when we did the Festival of Mind, we struck an agreement. They didn't quite believe us that we were going to sleep there and cook there. So we wrote all this in the application, got kind of, okay, we've got it, and then so we started to kind of setting up beds. So, like, so you're actually going to sleep there? Yeah. And then we sort of, so are you going to cook here? And there was a bit of an issue around cooking, what we couldn't do. In the end, we struck an agreement where we were allowed to have a slow cooker, and actually, although that's not what we initially planned, it worked out really well. People brought food in the evening, and we slow cooked a meal the previous morning. So although people weren't actually, they bought vegetables and things, they weren't actually going to eat those vegetables in the evening. It was kind of gifting vegetables and then also a slow cooked meal out of the vegetables the previous people brought. So that was a kind of quite a nice dynamic kind of relationship going through kind of a concern for health and safety. So I think these things can be spun to your advantage. Well, not always, but there are ways of kind of using what you are allowed to and kind of making it really nice and lovely.
What do you do with your family if you have an old health and safety check and food and ideas? I'm not trying to get you paranoid.
I just had a meeting last week with three women who want to take the kitchen forward. And that's kind of the way that we do each segment of it. So we'll get a small team, we want to take the lead, and then we'll submit an application on their behalf so that they can, so that the investment can come on steer and they're interested in. So that's going ahead this week. But yeah, we'll call the council and we'll get the spec of legal health and safety and make sure it meets that, and then we'll say if you want to cook and sell to the public, there's a kitchen and a space available, and you do so.
But it's quite a thing to try and conform to those standards, you know what I mean? You can't like casually, I'll do it on Thursday, you do it on Tuesday. I'm not criticizing, I'm just saying it's quite a high bar to achieve, isn't it? You know, if you want to set up a cafe, for example.
See, the kitchen needs to be built to a spec, and then you've got to store food in the right shelves, for example.
But that's quite a big thing, isn't it? It's not like, oh, I can't come in on Tuesday, but Fred will come in and do it, and he more or less knows, you know what I mean? It has to be all, like, incredibly.
So you might have, like, an induction for each individual that lasts half an hour, maybe, that covers the key points, or you might have a little training session for everyone who wants to use it, and once they pass, they can get permission to use the kitchen, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does anyone who has the... Does anything have any questions or comments?
We're from a group called the Free University of Sheffield, and we do like free education campaigning. So like part of what we like to do is like open up private spaces to make them accessible, and like create free education spaces. We've been thinking about doing it in like empty university buildings, moving probably into next year. And I just guess like if anyone has any advice or suggestions about like the logistics of taking a university or a building that is empty and making it into something like socially productive and accessible.
University buildings is a kind of interesting issue, so that's something we've looked at in particular detail. But one thing we are doing is next week we're publishing a newspaper that looks at how empty buildings can be taken on, focusing on coming up with agreements with landlords. Potentially universities are very tricky landlords. We can share that sort of research with you.
How does people get hold of that newspaper?
It's going to be freely available. It's going to be available online and in print. It's being printed next week. So, best thing to do is contact you.
Do you want to just give us like a website now or something that we can access it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll give. I can share my email address, which is.
Do you want to do that? Yeah.
Yeah. Can I do it, Seth?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So. See
talking about the university, I discovered that West Bank Library, you can just get a ticket to go in, and you have the order to know it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas the Information Commons, you know, it's like, who are you? Get out, yeah. You know. Have you got a you just get this total vibe. It's called the Commons, it's very ironic.
Yeah,
it's absolutely ironic. Yeah. But I went into West Bank and I just said, I've got some things I want to research. Oh, very nice, you know. They're not only allowed, we were like, is there any way we can get you a bit more than that? They're obviously a bunch of hardcore liberals have still, you know, got their doubt there. But I don't know if everyone else already knew about that, but it's an amazing result.
Yeah, and like one thing that we want to do is, in the long term, try and get the university to open up everything it does to the public. And on the side of, like, I think occupiers at LSE recently won the goal for LSE to open up all their access to the public, but also to publicise that they do that, as a way of like breaking down the private nature of the university.
Well, you could publicise it anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Did you occupy Inox?
Yeah.
I think that's a very clever move, because often students take on lecture theatres and they open themselves up to, I think, unfair, but criticism that they're kind of preventing education. Whereas here it's kind of the opposite. You avoided that ability to criticise in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a really like private, exclusive space that we opened up.
So this kind of tactical about what buildings you decide to occupy.
Yeah, and so we've really been spending a lot of time thinking about like what we can do that is not like closing down education spaces, like you said, but opening up private and exclusive spaces that are inaccessible and making them accessible. And we think like empty university buildings has the potential to be really great, either for like a permanent organising space for us as an organisation or a whole workshop. It's just space going to waste.
So I'm assuming you've been in touch with like the accommodation commercial services and the estates department really about all this stuff. I'm sure they've got like the estates department probably trickier to deal with than the accommodation commercial services in Sheffield. The estates fund purely financially kind of, you know, got a financial mindset that this is our estate, this is our income generating asset, whereas the accommodation commercial services are more or less kind of the green card, it seems, where they just kind of try to
better the facilities that are already there, so they can have maybe people to run about a bit.
There are examples like Burns Park, which unlocks unused university land, data centers, it's a kind of community garden wasteland that's owned by the university. It's been opened up.
In Sheffield.
In Sheffield.
I thought that was council aid.
I thought it was university aid. So we did something to check in. But I know that was quite a long, laborious process to get that opened up.
So I guess one of the things we're weighing up is whether to occupy this space and then set it up as our own and say, well, you know, we're not leaving, or to try and do it more legitimately by negotiating with ACS or residents or whatever.
You could even do both, between, like I was saying, sticks and carrots. Like, if you occupy something and made a nuisance of yourself, they're going to be more likely to negotiate.
Are they developing a public profile against students and boards? What are the examples I've seen that have lasted and have become a long-term existence?
And what stage are you at the moment, then? Is it like in a month's time you're going to occupy that building, or sometime the next year, you know?
Yeah, not really in a month's time. These are probably like medium term plans. We haven't really got like a kind of a fixed strategy of how to go yet. We're probably just kind of at the moment just thinking about the direction we want to take and what would be feasible.
Yeah, I guess the benefit of doing it legitimately is then you can advertise it in more ways to reach a wider audience in Sheffield, and otherwise maybe you'd just be limited to social media if you're making something in the future. So I think if you did something legitimately, then Sheffield Live would be happy to help you advertise. Yeah. But do both and see how far you get taking different routes.
Maybe it is like the same kind of approach as Union Street, like you just genuinely approach the university as a landlord with empty properties, and you kind of say, if you know other people are doing this within the city, why can we not do something similar? Like that, you know, maybe this is a good thing for the university as to be seen as something that's you know, the idea of the engaged university, but also the kind of idea of, them kind of doing something back and forth with something that's happening. So, that you do just kind of approach them that level just a little more, just as though they were landed.
Can I just ask about Union Street? You said at the end that you were thinking you were looking at a couple of other buildings, and yet I didn't pay for what you said before that you were totally full capacity on your four floors. It sounded like there was quite a lot of slack still there, so how come you're looking at new buildings? And
two reasons, maybe. I want to be prepared for the potential that the landlord wants to do something over the space, so we're going to have that like
How long does it take?
I think the negotiation can maybe be 6 months, and then once you're in, it can take the same to prepare it for to turn an empty space into a space that you can call professional. Yeah. What I'd do, as you what you said actually, is see if you can create an identity that the university is going to see as a positive partner, and set up some chats that that they might see it, or they might be quite optimistic about the collaboration from an external view.
And that is for, I think that's the interesting way of doing it. I think it's for the problem space, setting yourself up against the US and then why it's funding them to go forward. That's clearly,
I think that's an issue. They already know Michael's. So I don't know, I guess
there'd be two sides of what you do, the bit which they know and don't like, and then a bit that they like and associate slightly different
from your paper different from
it's an interesting model using a kind of one profitable or kind of seems to be kind of commercial front to fund of activity.
The name's interesting. Free University is a great name, but it might be illegal to use the word university because aren't they created by charter or something? So it's like a copyright word. In the past, we've run a free school, and I think you can use the word school for anything. You don't have to be a registered school or something. Just something to think about.
Yeah, I don't know. You never come across any problems with that. There are other free universities. There are a few in London now, so I'm more of a movement than a single institution.
I think that the advantage is, in contrast to the free school, because there's been so much around free schools, as in kind of like often associated with like religious, non-state free schools, that the free school, what was seen as that kind of radical alternative teaching space where, it was not only free in terms of no cost but kind of more free thought, the term is now complicated by people associating it with the Tory free schools. So free university has that advantage that it is separate and it's still seen as radical. So I think it's a good way to go. Okay, we've got about 5 minutes left. Does anyone want to say or add anything? Or do you... So apart from the free university stuff that's moving forward, then there's your newspaper, and then you're doing other projects as well, and you're moving into who knows how many new projects. So it's just the thing to move forward.
Our kind of op project that's now kind of got its home, temporary home in here to Delhi.
Okay.
There's going to be an event, kind of sleepover residential event for the next day that happens once a month. And it happens on the first Sunday of the month. So that's one of them.
So it's like a 48 hour thing?
It normally starts in the evening. So we start off normally by sharing a meal or doing some sort of shared domestic activity. Hopefully involves in a discussion about using empty buildings, different ways of living, and then it's one of the opportunities to stay over. I guess up to 6 people to stay at night.
Uh-huh.
So last 2 to the morning.
Okay, so it's more like 12 hours than 48. Okay. So the first Sunday of every month.
Yeah,
in Theatre Delhi. And Theatre Delhi, they've got permission to be there until October, is that right?
I think that's correct.
Yeah.
I think it's August.
Okay. Other things that are happening in the future that people want to talk about?
I'd really like to see something happening around homelessness. I'd like to see someone taking a space and doing something like that. For me, I'd like to see a place where if you want to get involved in social work or activity, there's a place where you can go and do that and eat together and get involved in stuff. And I think something's to be. We'd all agree about that. I think there's loads of charities and social enterprises run by individuals from tiny little offices and obscure places across the city that by collaborating could really make something different happen. I'd like to see that as well. I'd like to see some of the energy that happened around the election be channeled into some kind of momentum, and I think by working together that's more likely to happen. So all those sorts of things.
Yeah, just 2 questions from what you just said. There was a festival of
debate.
Homes or something that happened in Enfield Park. There was a big pop-up house. Does anyone know anything about that?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, you were part of that, weren't you? Yeah.
We tried to launch.
Do you want to say something about that?
That was
kind of raised the issue of homelessness.
It was raised the issue about homelessness, the housing crisis. So there was more broader than just homelessness.
Yeah.
But
affordable housing as well.
Kind of issues with affordable housing and housing being like we talk about even like renting being out really. As we use that as an opportunity to put the idea of a community land trust out there to see if there's interest. Community land trust is the way of communities getting together in order to take ownership and management of this land. So it's not owned by an individual, it's owned by a defined community, geographic community, which is an interesting way of taking land out of speculation.
And that was a one-off thing, wasn't
that's
it?
That's a one-off thing. Although there's Homes of Britain, which makes it bigger.
And then the other thing I just want you to think of is whether you work with WeGather, you know, that organisation that they had similar aims of trying to have various kind of social change radical groupings under one roof, but they've gone down the they own the building or they rent the space. They're on Club Garden Road. They only rent it, can you remember? Right, okay. But they spent a lot of time doing up that building. And have you worked with them?
Yeah, I've tried to as much as possible. I think they're quite successful now. They charge a premium and that's that. But we pay them to cater for us as much as we can afford.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think their emphasis is on being quite commercially viable, isn't it? Thank you. So next in here we have Zapatistas, struggle against dispossession, so not an unrelated thing, followed by nationalism. And next door we have IWW organisers and they're fighting wage theft and their logistics is struggling.
Very good. Mm.